This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Anthrax, Ebola, SARS, those are just some of the terrible poisons and diseases that may be coming to Boston's South End. Last March, state officials gave Boston University final environmental approval for the National Emerging Infectious Disease Laboratory, commonly known as the BU Biolab. That approval, despite continued opposition from some community leaders.
Radio Boston intern Darian Gray toured the building where research may soon begin on some of the world's deadliest pathogens.
Visitors to the BU Biolab must submit to a background check and airport-like security before entering the building, surrounded by black metal fencing and accessible through a squat guardhouse.
Thank you. You have been identified.
So I just used the iris scan. You cannot get on any floor in this building without going through an iris scan.
Dr. Ron Corley, Associate Provost for Research on the Medical Campus and Associate Director of the Biolab, unlocks the door by looking into an eye scanner.
Did you hear that buzzing sound? That buzzing sound is a set of personnel counters, and so what that is not only an audible for us to know that someone piggybacked on my iris scan, but it also sends an alert to our control center so that security is alerted that someone is piggybacking.
Inside the biosafety lab, there are a host of engineering features designed to protect workers and researchers.
This room is under what's called slight negative pressure, which means air is always flowing from the outside to the inside, and this is a safety feature of keeping things that, if you had a spill, for example, of moving back out into a public area. Everything is seamless, which allows for easy decontamination in these facilities. The lights, fixtures are sealed so that nothing gets into the light fixtures and could get into an electric socket. Electric sockets are also sealed in these spaces so that no air could ever escape out of them.
Biosafety Level 4 labs, home to the most dangerous pathogens, are housed in a different, more secure building within the building, like a vault within a bank.
So if you look up above the wall, you'll notice a little gap of an inch or two, and that inch or two gap is a gap between essentially the two building spaces. This is just kind of the standard wall that you would have in any normal laboratory building or office facility in this particular case. And this one is just solid concrete. These walls are 12 inches thick, 16-inch floors, 14-inch ceilings. Highly reinforced concrete. I've never seen rebar in concrete as big as this rebar is and as closely packed as it is. And the reason it's built differently is because these facilities get decontaminated by filling them with poisonous gas, essentially.
Poison gas, usually aerosolized hydrogen peroxide, is used to decontaminate the labs in the case of an emergency or as a scheduled maintenance at least once a year. Corley explains that before entering these labs, personnel start in a locker room where they must get completely naked.
I mean, nothing goes in, underwear, nothing. Your glasses go in, but everything else stays behind. You would put on a pair of scrubs, you'd put on a pair of socks, and the scrubs and socks then stay behind as you work your way back out again.
We pass through a shower stall. Researchers leaving the lab are required to shower before putting back on their street clothes. The next room looks like something straight from a disaster movie. Stainless steel, red rubber hosing, cameras everywhere, and hanging on the walls, bright blue bodysuits.
In a biosafety level 4, you're wearing a full body spacesuit. These are designed by a company that, in fact, designs real spacesuits. And they're designed so that when you seal them, you give a complete seal for the person that's inside these suits. When you hook them up to the external air, so what you're hearing is the sound that an individual inside a suit would hear the entire time that they're working.
After putting on their spacesuits, researchers will then enter a transitional room between the suit room and the lab. This space has two doors that are interlocked so that only one door can open at a time. When researchers come out of the lab, the exit door won't unlock until an automatic chemical shower runs.
They're in this shower for 7 to 8 minutes. That chemical shower is a high volume, high pressure, wash that allows their suit to be totally decontaminated. There is nothing you do fast in a biosafety level 4 facility. Everything is very slow.
Despite the technical ingenuity, neighbors remain concerned about the risks from accidents, terrorist attacks, or disgruntled employees.
That report from Radio Boston intern Darian Gray. Now, the BU Biolab is on Albany Street in Boston's South End. As Darian noted, local residents have long objected to placing the research center in their neighborhood. Five of those residents have filed a new lawsuit, arguing that a Level 4 pathogens research lab has no place in a residential urban community. That case will be heard on Thursday in Massachusetts District Court. We're joined now by Claire Allen, a longtime Roxbury resident and founder of Roxbury Safety Net, a community organization opposed to the BU Biolab. Claire Allen, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Laura Maslow-Armond, a staff attorney for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Economic Justice. She'll be in court arguing on behalf of residents on Thursday. Laura Maslow-Armond, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So first, Claire Allen, let me hear from you. You live in the neighborhood. Tell me, just describe to me what other residents feel and what's your take on whether or not you think your chances are good this time in stopping the BU Biolab. It's almost ready to be opened.
Thank you. Our main concern since 2002 have been the same as what they are now. So the case in that's the court that's happening on the 11th is not a new case. It's something that we started at least 6 or 7 years ago.
I guess that makes me wonder. I mean, what makes you feel? Do you feel any more confident of victory this time around?
Well, considering that the Supreme Judicial Court made a judgment in our favor that MEPA, the Massachusetts Environmental Policy Act, did not do their job. That the BU folks who are running the lab and NIH did not do a proper risk assessment. It was pretty much, if it's not built in Boston, then it won't be built at all. Mm. And that's what they put in their risk assessment, not really checking to see whether or not residents are more at risk in Roxbury than they are in other locations.
Okay, so Laura Maslow-Armond, let me get some thoughts from you on that, because as Claire was referring to, the NIH did publish this big risk assessment back in June of 2012. It was almost a 3,000-page document. And then in January of this year, NIH concluded that that assessment was adequate, and they closed its investigation, saying
exactly
that
right.
They're done.
That's right.
Their claim is that the lab doesn't present any risk to the surrounding community.
Right.
I mean, in court, what specifically are you going to say to argue against that?
I have to say I'm not going to be arguing.
Okay.
On Thursday, it's a summary judgment. In other words, the judge is going to rule on the papers. Going to rule. Both sides have filed a summary judgment motion. And there's so many contentious issues that if those issues go to the heart of the case, a judge usually shouldn't rule on summary judgment and let the case then go forward. I think that, to answer more broadly, the same concerns that Judge Gantz listed in his decision, he was then a Superior Court judge, in July 2006, those same concerns are there. The risk assessment now has been multiplied. It's 2,700 pages plus. But it hasn't really addressed the risk of malevolent intent, somebody becoming deranged, some suicidal, homicidal. How do you prevent that kind of risk, which would be everywhere, but it's worse to have it in a congested urban area where the impact of any accidental release would be disproportionately hard on the minority community?
Well, Claire, Dr. Ron Corley, who's the Associate Provost for Research at the BU Medical Campus and the Associate Director of the BU Biolab, I mean, he says that they regularly have Homeland Security agents doing walkthroughs and visits, and that they know what the threat assessment on the facility has done, and they feel confident that the risk of, you know, a terrorist attack or that kind of accidental release is very low.
Well, let me tell you what. If I had a $1 billion project that has been fought by the residents successfully now for 11 years, I think I would be saying the same thing. I don't expect Mr. Conley, is it?
Corley,
I'm sorry.
Dr. Corley.
God, I've been calling him the wrong name all this time. But either way, I know him rather well. And, you know, he is a good man. But, I mean, what do you expect for him to say? We have scientists from around the country, Nobel Prize winners, in this type of area, scientific area. And all of them pretty much have agreed that, you know, no matter, like I heard them speak about how durable the walls are and how the suits are just raring to go, I think what's important for folks to understand is what we've been fighting for is the what if.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We're not necessarily saying if the lab, God forbid, was open that immediately something would happen. But as you see in the papers of last week and this week, the CDC has had quite a bit of problems as far as regulation is concerned. And that's one that's in the urban area. NIH also has had problems with their suits. And now there's requests from 17 other labs that want their suits redesigned and fitted better. So, you know, I do hear them say that, yes, they are prepared, and it's a vault within a vault and container within a container. But, I mean, you got Fort Detrick, mm-hmm. which is a military base, who's had several accidents in the past year.
Well, let me ask you about that, because we have just about a minute to go,
sure.
And you make a compelling point. But on the other hand, folks might say, these labs, this research has to be done somewhere. It's got to be built somewhere. And their argument is that BU's medical center, where the scientists are doing, you know, related research, is right there. And so having the labs close together, you know, is actually going to do greater good in the long run.
I do understand that. And, you know, my father's an OBGYN, and I come from a family of nothing but scientists. My brother runs a level 3 lab in North Carolina. So I understand about science and the future of science, and we would never shoot that down. The point is that it may be near Boston Medical Center, who has pulled out their partnership, I might add, with BU. You know, accidents do occur, and that's something that we need to really focus on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that we have the courts to rely on, and now not so much our political powers.
Well, you have your court date on Thursday in Massachusetts District
Court. Yes, ma'am, sure do.
Claire Allen, founder of Roxbury Safety Net, a community organization that's organized in opposition to the BU BioLab. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Laura Maslow Armin, staff attorney for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Economic Justice. Thank you as well.
Thank you.
And stay with us. Coming up, the link between early literacy and future success. Providence, Rhode Island Mayor Angel Taveras joins us to talk about closing the word gap in his city. Words matter, and Providence talks. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.